CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Israel, the Knesset, the assembly is tied 60-60. What does it mean? Malcolm Hohnlein is here with me, and we are very pleased to welcome David Makovsky, the Ziegler Distinguished Fellow at the Washington Institute, director of the Karet Project on Arab-Israeli Relations, and the author of the new book, Beyond the Blocks, Jewish Settlement East of Israel's Security Barrier, and How to Avert the Slide to a One-State Outcome. David, a very good evening to you. I go to the tie in the Knesset, 60-60. This is not about sudden death overtime. This is to be continued. What does it mean to have a tied assembly, no one having a majority? Good evening to you, David.
It's good to be with you, John, and Malcolm. It's always a delight to be with both of you. Look, I think what it means in practical terms is that the Bennett government survives for now. There's not a majority to bring it down. Even the 60 in the opposition is not homogenous. Would some of them want to go for new elections? Yes. But I think for the most part, you know, Israel doesn't need a fifth election in the last 3 years. So I think Bennett survives, but he, like Yitzhak Rabin in the 1990s, you know, the magic number is 61 to also pass legislation. So he might not, he might only have 60. So survival is not enough. You want to not just survive, but thrive. And there he might have to reach some ad hoc arrangements with a group that's not part of his 60 to get legislation done. But the bottom line is, for now, the government does not fall. Of course, it is the Middle East. If there are other developments on the Temple Mount, Haram al-Sharif, this could change. You never say never in the Middle East.
Malcolm?
So we have the upcoming visit of President Biden to Israel in June, as well as to other countries. I understand he maybe even Saudi Arabia. He's certainly going to visit, I guess, the Ramallah, to the PA. What do you expect of this? What is the agenda? To show the flag? Is it to build up the relationship? Is it a precursor to something else?
Look, I think on the Israel front, it's clearly he's had a good rapport with Bennett, the prime minister. He knows that Bennett's coalition is wobbly for the reasons we just said. And I think he sees that he could both, you know, it's a few birds in one stone. You know, you make a visit, you kind of shore up U.S.-Israel relations, and it could be a shot in the arm to Naftali Bennett. So I think, you know, that's part of it. It's also at a very delicate moment in the Iran negotiations. So far, the U.S. has refused what seemed like was the final point in the negotiations, which was that you would delist from a foreign terrorist organization the Revolutionary Guards of Iran. But they've clearly been involved in a lot of terrorist acts. So I think he feels sometimes his position is misrepresented in Israel. And I think he wants to say that, you know, he's not going to bend on this Revolutionary Guards front. To the extent that he can improve Gulf relations, I think this would be a huge deal. It's too soon to know where he would be visiting, but clearly if there'll be more production of oil, it would certainly help the president domestically before a midterm election. Also would have the benefit of trying to reduce European dependence on Russian energy. So we'll see if where that goes. But I assume that those are two of the big objectives.
David, Naftali Bennett is the prime minister, and as you say, he will survive for the moment. Is he regarded in Israel as a good steward of the Abraham Accords? Is he congratulated for how he's managing them?
Yeah, I think he's done actually a very good job. His polling numbers are not high. A lot of people on the right in Israel are upset that he didn't put Bibi over the top, so to speak, but brought Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu down. So there's some overhang there. But I think, look, he's had great meetings with Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, the head of the Crown Prince of United Arab Emirates, Sisi, the president of Egypt. His style is a very engaging one of problem solving. He used to be in the high tech world. And I've heard from the Arab side and from the White House, you know, that he's effective in these meetings. So I think, you know, you could say, well, has he not been the beneficiary of the people who come before him, who helped set up the foundations? But I think he's done a good job. And I also think his tone for the country is somewhat of like the country just wants to kind of chill out, so to speak. It's been like America is today. You know, it's become very polarized and ideological. And the Israelis, I think, want to be more like the old America, which is consensus. And that's what he's trying to do. If you put it in a football analogy, he's goal line to goal line. The most diverse government in Israel's history. And his tone is unity. He says 70% agree on 70% of the issues. There's no left-right issue on COVID, infrastructure, health, education. Let's find what unites all Israelis. And I think his unifying tone has been very soothing for a country where there's a little, you know, weariness of all the kind of ideological combat of the past.
Did you mention that he's a young man, David? A very young man, just 50 years old. That is a turn the page.
That's right. Well, Bill Clinton, there's been a young American president, John F. Kennedy, we've had in our country. But I think his tone is avoid conflict. What can we do together? And let's accentuate those issues. Now, on the Palestinian issue is one of those issues that is very contentious. And he is not really engaged on this, although he has designated as defense minister Benny Gantz to be the point person on Israeli-Palestinian economic issues where there is agreement on the like when it comes to quality of life questions. So I think that is an example of something where the Israelis say, you know, we want some movement there, but we don't want it to overwhelm the whole national agenda. I think he's handled it pretty well.
Malcolm?
And Bennett, you know, doesn't want to go to elections knowing that his numbers are not that good. And so the tone really is the only way to sustain a coalition.
Yes.
But it is soothing. Let me ask you, but Secretary Blinken attended the Negev summit and was invited by the parties to come. And they pressed him supposedly about greater security cooperation against Iran. Do you see this as a key issue in the president's agenda, the potential follow up to the summit and his coming and the president's going then to Saudi Arabia? Who are not very happy about the appointment of the ambassador and other aspects of the relationship with the U.S.?
Look, it's too soon to know about his other stops. I just think, analytically speaking, there's a clear interest of the United States to want to have closer ties with the Gulf writ large. The Saudi thing is obviously complex, but I think, you know, sometimes crisis creates opportunity in that the bigger crisis with Putin and Ukraine is so overwhelming that it requires quid pro quos. I saw Fareed Zakaria, I don't know, it was on one of the networks or one of his op-eds, also came out for saying, you know, it's time to improve relations with the Gulf. So, you know, we'll see where the president goes. I think it's too soon to predict, but I do think the idea of closer ties with the Gulf is something the United States would like. And we'll see. Now, on Iran, I think here he's got to assure the Israelis who are concerned. Look, there's this deal. And then there's the question of, you know, how long it'll last. There are different gradations under the old Iran nuclear deal known as JCPOA of 2015, where certain restrictions fall off. Between now and 2031, and Israel's going to be very concerned about that. I can get into some of the deep details, but I don't want to get too technical. But I think he needs to talk directly with the Israelis on what he sees about Iran. The Gulf, I think there's a nervousness in the Emirates, for example, where you had these Houthi strikes near their airport. The Emirates are used to just, you know, they want to be the Singapore of the Middle East. They want to make money. They're trying to de-escalate their position regionally. They've had trips to kind of former adversaries. They want to lower the heat. They don't see a contradiction between lowering the heat regionally and close ties with Israel. They think it's part of a broader policy of economic growth. But clearly, after the Houthi strike and a belief that the U.S. didn't do enough. And by the way, it didn't start there. It started with the Aramco strike on September 14th, 2019, during the last administration. That the Saudis felt that nothing was done to help them when there was this Iranian strike. So I think there are these questions in the Gulf. Is America leaving the Middle East? Now, Americans would say, no, we're not. And believe me, I've talked to people for the Pentagon and all over, and they say, we keep saying we're not leaving the Middle East. Don't say we're leaving the Middle East. We're not leaving. But the people in the Middle East don't believe that.
David.
And there's a credibility issue here that spans three administrations now, that they hear the president saying we want less Middle East for America. So how the president addresses those fears is going to be a big issue.
David Makovsky, Malcolm Holine. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.